I'm Bonnie Lin, Director of the China Power Project and Senior Fellow for Asian Security at the Center for Strategic International Studies. In this episode of the China Power Podcast, we're discussing China's advancement in quantum technologies. We'll unpack what quantum technologies are and what China's ambitions are in this space, as well as the state of progress of China's quantum efforts. Here to discuss this and more is Dr. Edward Parker. Dr. Parker is a physical scientist at the RAND Corporation. He is broadly interested in the societal impact of disruptive technologies, and his current research focuses on emerging quantum technologies, artificial intelligence, and cybersecurity. He has served as a peer reviewer for the physics journals Quantum Science and Technology, the European Journal of Physics, and Physica A. Edward, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
So the topic of our discussion today is quantum and China. If you may, could you start us off by talking a bit about what exactly is quantum technology? I understand there are a couple of key areas that folks focus on, including quantum computing, quantum communications, and quantum sensing. But could you just give us a bit more background on what is quantum technology and how could it be used to bring countries more advantage on the economic and national security front?
Sure. So that's a difficult question to answer, and different people would answer it in different ways. The traditional answer that I usually give is I start by saying quantum physics is the theory of physics that describes how essentially atomic and subatomic particles behave. This has been studied academically for more than 100 years at this point. Quantum technology is the use of those strange physical behaviors, which are somewhat counterintuitive, to collect, process, or transmit information. That is the sort of textbook definition. I think it's not necessarily very concrete. So I guess the more concrete explanation is there are a bunch of different information processing capabilities that come from devices that use sort of individual atoms or other exotic physical systems, which are kind of outside of our usual experience. And so I think the best way to convey what quantum technology is actually good for is just to describe those three categories that you just mentioned. The three main applications people usually talk about fall into quantum computing, quantum communications, and quantum sensing. I'm happy to go into as much detail as you'd like about any of those, but very briefly, quantum computing, which is the most famous, refers to a new generation of computers which operate on very, very different principles from any of our existing computers, which could solve certain types of math problems much, much faster than our existing supercomputers could. None of the existing quantum computers are yet there, but there's very strong promise for all kinds of computational applications that we can get into. The second category is quantum communications, which is very briefly, and skipping over some other things we can get into, it refers to ways of transmitting information that are very difficult to intercept, very difficult to hack. So it's a form of very secure communications, among other applications as well. And the third is quantum sensing, which refers to the use of very high precision sensors, or in some cases, small and cheap sensors, which are really pushing the very boundary of the sensitivity that is allowed by the laws of physics. There's a lot of different types of those sensors. There's accelerometers, electric field sensors, magnetic field sensors, gravity sensors, atomic clocks, all of which have a lot of different potential applications, which we can get into if you'd like. But just at a very high level, that is what we mean when we're talking about quantum technology. It's a bunch of different technologies which have a bunch of different potential applications that all involve information in some sense, but take a pretty broad range of specific applications.
Thank you, Edward. I do want to follow up a little bit more on the specific applications, but also perhaps more concretely specific examples of what are some of those technologies. You mentioned, for example, for quantum computing, that none of the existing computers yet are really quantum computers. They're not quite there yet. What about quantum communications and quantum sensing? Are we already using both in our daily lives, or are we not yet there?
Sure. So in order, I'll just start with quantum computing. Quantum computers do exist today. There are some what are called intermediate scale quantum computers, which are still very small compared to more advanced regular computers. So quantum computers do exist today. They can perform certain esoteric calculations very quickly, but they cannot yet do anything useful. So for quantum computing, we're still in the process of scaling them up to useful sizes. And I can get into some numbers if you'd like. But in terms of what those applications might look like, there's a very wide range. One that comes up a lot is drug discovery in the biomedical sector, computationally modeling chemicals that might be useful for new forms of medicine. Others include scientific modeling of materials to design new materials with interesting properties, you know, very lightweight, very strong, things like that. Other examples include logistics, efficient routing of solving difficult computational models for things like efficient routing through complicated supply chains or transmission networks. Those are just a few examples. There are lots of others. AI is a little more speculative. There's some thought that it might also be useful for artificial intelligence and machine learning, although the algorithms there are not quite as well understood. In terms of quantum communications, some of the secure communications applications are fairly mature in the sense that there are commercial products available. They've actually been commercially available since 2007. So for quite some time now, there has been a market for this quantum communication systems, although I'd say they're still fairly not terribly widely used, especially in the United States, and we can get into that. They're actually significantly more widely used in China. But I would say this is not yet a sort of major market, but there are several companies that are selling real products now in quantum communications. And quantum sensing is most of the types of quantum sensors that people describe are not yet commercially available, I wouldn't say. But there is one very important class of quantum sensors, which is atomic clocks, which is very mature and has actually been around since the 70s and underlies GPS. So there's at least one type of quantum sensor that every single one of us uses every day on our own smartphones. With the exception of atomic clocks, I'd say most of these technologies are still either in the laboratory or in the experimental R&D stage of corporations.
Thank you very much, Edward. I really appreciated the very detailed descriptions of all three categories. It seems to me at least the economic value of this technology is quite high. Could you talk a little bit about to what extent so far? And I know you mentioned many of these technologies are still in the laboratory, but to what extent so far is there military application of this technology? It seems like there should be for quantum computing and, of course, for communications, particularly to ensure secure communications, there should be quite a bit of military advantage of using quantum technology.
So that's a somewhat complicated question to answer. In a report that the RAND Corporation put out in February of 2022, I believe, we have a table that actually shows the Department of Defense's own estimates about the relative operational military utility of these various quantum technologies. The one area with fairly clear potential military utility is actually quantum sensing, primarily for what we call PNT, which stands for positioning, navigation, and timing. Right now, many of the militaries, and everyone else's for that matter, gets their PNT from GPS. GPS is by far the most widely used source of position, navigation, and timing information, and it works pretty well, but it doesn't always work. So alternatives to GPS are always an area of interest. So the use of potential quantum sensors for positioning, navigation, and timing is definitely an area of active interest. In terms of communications, the U.S. military has actually stated that it does not intend to adopt this particular secure quantum communication system, what's known as quantum key distribution, in operational settings for a variety of reasons that we can get into. But basically, it seems rather expensive. It's not entirely clear how reliable it is. There are a lot of practical unknowns as to what operational difficulties might come up if it were to be used in the field. So the National Security Agency has actually publicly stated that it does not approve of the use of quantum key distribution, which is the technical term for this secure quantum communication system, for national security systems. That's the public statement up on their website. Due to these kind of high uncertainties on issues of reliability and cost and potential denial of service attacks and things like that. Quantum computing, I think there are some unknowns. There are potential discussions of using quantum computing for logistics, which is certainly a important priority of the U.S. military. They have a lot of challenging logistics problems other kinds of modeling and simulation as well. But perhaps the most important application from a military perspective is a famous application of quantum computing, which is the ability to break encryption. So eventually, much larger scale quantum computers than currently exist might eventually be able to deploy something called Shor's algorithm, which is a quantum algorithm which would allow that computer to very efficiently crack almost all of the encryption that's used to protect internet traffic and other forms of electronic communications. So this is a serious threat and a risk to sensitive communications, of which the military certainly has some. So the National Security Agency has also announced that this is a serious risk that they are, you know, very aware of. And if an adversary were able to deploy a quantum computer capable of doing Shor's algorithm and breaking our encryption, that would certainly have serious national security impacts. And there are certain steps, certain countermeasures that the NSA is, and the rest of the federal government as well, is putting into place to counter that threat, which we can get into if you'd like.
Thank you, Edward. I do want to transition the conversation to focus on how much China has adopted different types of quantum capabilities, and what does that mean when we compare China's technological advances with that of the United States. So Edward, earlier you had mentioned that China is using quantum communications much more than the United States. But if we were to compare what China is doing across quantum technologies and perhaps across these three different areas that you highlighted, what are some of the notable milestones that you have observed from either Chinese companies or Chinese laboratories?
Yes, I'm often asked, many people are often asked, who is ahead in this so-called race in quantum between the US and China? And we can discuss whether it's useful to frame it in terms of a race or not, but we put out a report last year doing a very detailed comparative analysis of the US and China's efforts in quantum. And it's a nuanced story. There is no simple answer, the US is ahead or China is ahead. There's some fields in which it's not clearly meaningful to say what ahead even means. But I would say the short summary version is that the US appears to be more advanced in the areas of quantum computing and quantum sensing. China is perhaps further ahead in quantum communications, although there are some nuances there about how useful are the things that they're investing in. So China has put a lot of resources into this quantum key distribution technology, this secure quantum communications technology that I discussed. They are the only country in the world known to have launched a satellite which is capable of performing quantum key distribution from outer space. In fact, they've actually launched two satellites, one back in 2016 and one just last year, which are capable of doing space-based quantum communications. No other nation is known to have done that, although several nations are trying to launch similar satellites. China has also laid down an extremely extensive network of fiber optic cable throughout much of the east coast of their country, connecting a whole lot of major cities with fiber for doing quantum key distribution, secure quantum communication. They've laid down several thousands, I believe, of miles running from Beijing to Shanghai, which is by far the most extensive quantum key distribution network in the world. I would say those are their main milestones in quantum communications. And the other biggest milestone that we've seen in the public literature is in one specific type of quantum computing. One of the national labs in China has released a quantum computer, which is, I would say, comparable to, perhaps very slightly ahead of or behind, but fairly comparable to the best quantum computers that the United States has put out. Although that's in one particular approach, and there are other approaches as well in which they are not as competitive. So it's a complicated story.
If I could follow up on the quantum communications, you mentioned China launched two satellites in space for quantum communications. And you had mentioned earlier that quantum could be used as a potential replacement for GPS. Is that what you see these satellites are for?
No, this is different. This is for communications, not for navigation. These satellites are used to set up communication channels between two different ground stations, which are then extremely securely encrypted and very difficult to hack. Essentially, one example of what they did was a satellite flew over a ground station in Shanghai, sent down what's called an encryption key, and then flew over to a different ground station in Austria, sent down another copy of that same encryption key. And then the two ground stations in Austria and in China used that shared encryption key to securely encrypt a video teleconference. So it's a form of communication rather than navigation in this case.
Then, Edward, you also mentioned that China's laying down an extensive network of fiber optic cables thousands of miles from Beijing to Shanghai. And you're not seeing this yet inland from China, right? You're seeing this development mainly in the most developed coastal cities in China.
I believe that's correct, yes. I don't remember the exact geography of the network, but I think it is mostly in the more developed areas.
And are these cables, they're for secure communication, right? But could they also have a significant economic purpose, hence why the focus is on China's more developed coastal areas?
I think it's certainly possible. There are certainly many organizations that want secure communications beyond the government, many commercial industry. In fact, in the United States, most of the interest in this technology seems to have come from the financial sector, from commercial banks, which certainly have high requirements for information security and resistance toward hacking and interception as well. So I think there is certainly likely that there are commercial and government uses for this network, although I don't know exactly what it's being used for.
And government uses of this network could be, I guess, for surveillance of the population or better monitoring of communications internally. What are some of the potential government uses that you've seen discussed or mentioned of this thousands of miles of fiber optic cable that you were mentioning?
There was a mention in Chinese language public media that this system was used to, I believe, record a meeting of the Politburo or transmit information about that meeting. So we don't know how reliable that report is. There's clearly some, at least circumstantial evidence it's being used for government communications at fairly high levels. But other than that, I have really seen very little information about what this network is actually being used for. It is certainly a bit of a puzzle. It's a lot of investment and financial resources poured into a network, and we're really not clear what it's being used for.
Do we have anything similar like this in the United States yet?
There is not nearly as much physical investment in quantum key distribution. There are a few test beds that have been started up. One bank in, I believe, the Chicago area has experimented with using quantum key distribution to secure its communications. There are also certain test beds being run out of government labs, which are still fairly new, which are for more advanced applications of quantum communications, things that are not yet possible, but further down the road applications like networking together quantum computers, networking together quantum sensors. But those are really more for scientific research and development at this point, I think, rather than actual commercial applications. So no, there is not really anything of even nearly comparable scale in the United States that I know of.
Thank you. One question I did want to ask, and maybe I should have asked this earlier, was to what extent are you seeing China prioritize investments in quantum compared to U.S. attention or concerns about what quantum technology can achieve or not achieve? You had already highlighted earlier some of the concerns by various U.S. government agencies, including the NSA, but do you see the same sort of concerns within China, or do you see China potentially prioritizing quantum technologies more than the current U.S. government is doing?
I think the Chinese government certainly sees quantum as a strategic priority. In a lot of their public messaging, they have identified quantum technology as a technology of the future. The same is true of the United States government as well. The latest five-year plan of the Chinese Communist Party mentioned quantum several times as a strategic technology area that they'd like to advance in. In terms of funding, it's very difficult to say. We did a careful look through all the open source reports of how much the Chinese government is investing in quantum in our report that was released last year, and we found wildly conflicting numbers. I think we found a low estimate of $84 million a year and a high estimate of $3 billion a year. So we're talking well over an order of magnitude difference. So there's a real lack of transparency in how much money is actually being spent by the Chinese government, and we don't actually know whether they're spending more or less money than the U.S. government is. We have no way to gather that information from open sources, which I think is already somewhat against the kind of popular wisdom. There is a lot of claims in the public popular media in the United States that China is vastly outspending the United States by enormous amounts in quantum technology. And we were not able to really find any information in our report that confirmed that. It's just very hard to tell. But the level of government messaging, I think, is perhaps roughly similar in that both the United States government and the Chinese government has put out a lot of public statements saying they do see this particular technology as a strategic priority.
As a frame of reference, how much does the United States spend on quantum?
There's great information put out on this every year by the National Quantum Coordinating Office within the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. The amount has been increasing significantly in recent years because of a major law passed at the end of 2018 called the National Quantum Initiative Act, which almost doubled the amount of federal government investment in quantum. In fiscal year 2021, I believe it was $700 and some million a year. That amount, I believe, has continued to go up and is now at around $900 million a year from the federal government, most of which goes to national laboratories and university groups through Department of Energy, National Science Foundation, as well as the Department of Defense and the intelligence community. The figures for those latter organizations are not public.
And in the United States, as well as China, is most of the research for quantum technology still mainly funded from the governments or in these laboratories? Or are you seeing some companies leading the way in research in certain fields?
In the United States, it's difficult to say. In the United States, the federal government and private investment are both major sources. I would say that they're probably somewhat comparable, but there is probably more private investment recently going into quantum than the federal government. There's been a lot of venture capital money has been raised. At the time our report came out, we tallied up about $1.2 billion of venture capital funding total over several years. That amount of venture capital continued to increase, but I think now appears to be about leveling out. I don't remember the annual level off the top of my head, but it's very significant. It's cumulatively, it's in the billions of dollars. There are also significant internal investments from large companies like Google and IBM, both of which are making very significant research efforts into quantum technology, but we have no transparency at all on how much that money is there. If I had to guess, I would say there is probably at least as much money coming from private investment in the United States as there is from the federal government. In China, it's a very, very different picture. In China, nearly all of the investment that we've been able to identify from public sources seems to be coming from the federal government and mostly funneled through a few centralized national laboratories. There's actually one laboratory in particular in the city of Hefei, which is sort of the focal point of much of the quantum research going on in China. We did identify a little bit of private funding for private companies in China, but it was very, very small amount. It was, I think, something like $40 million total, which was less than 1% of the United States total. So we're really talking an enormous orders of magnitude difference between the sizes of the private quantum sectors in the US and China, where it's much larger in the United States.
From your perspective, given these differences in the sources of investment in quantum technology in the United States versus in China, how does this, if any at all, impact what China or the United States might be investing in? I guess I'm trying to understand, are there certain technologies that would be better led by investments in the private sector versus government?
It's a difficult question to answer. I wouldn't say we're seeing huge differences. I will say in the United States, private venture capital funding is very heavily focused on quantum computing specifically. We found that the vast majority of all the private venture capital in the US was going to companies that at least had quantum computing programs, although they weren't necessarily exclusively quantum computing. Some of them also did communications and sensing, but we found very, very little venture capital going to exclusively quantum communications or sensing companies. If I had to guess, I would say the reason for that might be that the uncertainty is highest in quantum computing as to what the applications will be and how valuable those applications will be, but there is the highest upside in that some people think that quantum computers could be truly transformational on a scale that classical computers were decades ago. We don't see nearly as much private capital going into quantum communications and sensing. Most of that seems to be funded either directly or indirectly by the federal government, in some cases through university research. I'm speculating here, but another thought that occurs to me is perhaps some of the sort of uniquely military applications or areas of high military prioritization, such as positioning, navigation, and timing, might be relatively a higher priority for government funding, although we've been seeing plenty of that in the United States. So I think the biggest difference in which topic areas are being researched between the US and China does seem to be China's heavy focus on quantum key distribution, this secure quantum communications technology. And I don't know whether that's because of government versus commercial funding. I don't really think that's necessarily the root of that disparity.
Thank you. Let's go back to a point that you mentioned much earlier. You mentioned that in terms of China's strengths, it was in quantum communication, but you also mentioned that China was a bit weaker when it came to quantum computing. And you noted that one of their computers is comparable to one of the best computers in the United States, but that it seemed like overall the United States was leading in quantum computing. Could you share a bit why China isn't as advanced as the United States on quantum computing? Is it because of the training, the technology, infrastructure? What's causing China to be lagging behind the United States here?
Sure. So a little bit of context with the quantum computing. There are many different basic approaches to quantum computing that are very different physically. They operate on very different physical principles. They have different components, different skills are required, different supply chains. This basically boils down to the different types of qubits under consideration. The qubit is the sort of elementary building block of a quantum computer. There are a lot of different ways to make a qubit. Some of them operate in superconductors, which are basically metal that's been cooled down to extremely low temperatures, just above absolute zero. Other qubits are atoms that are sort of levitated in place by lasers, which is a totally different paradigm for how to build these computers. So many different approaches are being pursued in parallel. Some are more advanced than others, but none of them are extremely advanced at this point. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty as to which approach will be successful. I would say the United States is fairly strong across all of the major approaches, whereas China is very strong in a smaller number of approaches. But in those smaller number of approaches, they are perhaps comparable to the United States. One of the approaches in which they are very, very strong is superconducting qubits, which is one of the most mature approaches out there. So depending on how you think about it, you could say they're at extremely close parity to the United States, or you could say they're significantly behind because they have a much less diverse portfolio of technologies they're very advanced at. I think you could argue that case either way. You could say they are at near parity or they're quite a bit behind, and it's too early to tell which of those is the case. Maybe that's more technical detail than you wanted. But as to why, I might flip that question around and say there are lots of other countries in the world too, other than the United States and China, and none of them or very few of them have yet demonstrated comparable capabilities to the United States either. So it's not like China is uniquely lagging behind. I would say China is still arguably ahead of the other 189 countries in the world. I think to me, the question is, why is the United States so strong? And that's a difficult question to answer. I mean, there are a lot of things the United States has going for it in R&D and all kinds of advanced technologies. You know, we have a world-class university system. We attract skilled technical talent from all over the world. We have strong government support for the sciences and research. We have a long history of expertise in quantum technology specifically, a strong private sector that's willing to invest significant resources in kind of long shot technologies. So I would say that is the explanation I would give if that answers your question.
Thank you. That does. Can I just ask a follow-on question? So you said that China has a much less diverse portfolio of the range of approaches for quantum computing. And you also said many of these approaches are still being explored in parallel. So we don't yet know if any of the approaches are better than the other, right?
That's correct. There are certainly clear differences we can point to between these different approaches as to what has been demonstrated so far. Some of them are certainly more mature than others. but all of them are still fairly early stage, and I would not be completely shocked if any of these approaches kind of leapfrog to the front fairly unexpectedly. So yes, I would say there's probably 5 or 6 different basic technical approaches that are all very much in play today.
So I did want to follow up on quantum sensing. How is the United States and China on quantum sensing? You mentioned that US is a bit more advanced on quantum sensing, but are there multiple approaches to quantum sensing, and are there areas where China is doing very well?
Quantum sensing is the most difficult, in my opinion, it's the most difficult of the three areas to assess for a variety of reasons, one of which is it's just very diverse. There are a lot of different types of quantum sensors being developed. They operate in very different ways. The second of which is the metrics of quality are difficult to establish for quantum sensors because there's a lot of different applications out there. In some cases, the main metric of quality might be physical robustness or small size, low power consumption. In other applications, sensitivity is really the thing that you really need the most of. So it's very hard to say in the abstract at a high level who is the best in quantum sensing. It's just an extremely complicated landscape with different metrics for different applications. So there are not any specific areas where I would say China is particularly strong or ahead that I know of, but I'll also say it's a challenging domain to assess. So there's certainly more research that could be done there.
Thank you. So Edward, I want to shift gears in this conversation to focus a bit more on the implications of China's investment in quantum technologies on US-China competition. We had talked about how investments in quantum technology could benefit China economically as well as benefit China militarily. Are there specific military applications of quantum technologies that those of us in Washington, D.C. are particularly worried about in terms of what we're currently seeing from China's investment in quantum technologies?
I would say the biggest concern of the United States national security establishment from quantum technology is the risk to encryption from Shor's algorithm. About a year ago, President Biden in May 2020 issued a national security memorandum essentially ordering the entire federal government to begin to take steps to upgrade their communication systems to neutralize this threat. The NSA has publicly stated that if an adversary was able to use a quantum computer to deploy Shor's algorithm, it could have a devastating impact on national security. But I will add, I do not get the sense from the United States' public messaging that they are specifically focused on this threat from China. The attitude they are taking is this is a technical tool which has very powerful, damaging potential for United States communication systems. There are countermeasures that we know how to put into place. We are beginning the process of putting those countermeasures into place, and it doesn't really matter exactly who the threat actor is. The technical countermeasures are the same either way. So the United States government has put out a lot of messaging about the threat that quantum computers will pose to our encryption. They never specifically identify China as a concern. I don't think there's any particular reason to specifically identify China as a concern because, as I said, this is still a fairly far away threat. We have very little idea how the development of quantum computing will play out. One could imagine scenarios where all kinds of threat actors eventually are able to deploy this. So I don't get the sense that the concern is that China could get their hands on this. The concern is just that anyone could get their hands on this, you know, even potentially including the criminal organization within the United States or something like that. So the government is not specifically focused on the threat from China. I think the government is just focused on the threat as a technology risk.
And in terms of looking at technology and how central that is to U.S. competition with China, we do know that the Biden administration has placed export controls on advanced semiconductors with the goal of limiting China's advances in this area. But do you see the need for similar steps to be placed on limiting China's development in quantum technologies?
There have been several actions taken over the past couple of years regarding export controls on quantum technology. In, I believe it was the end of 2021, the Commerce Department placed two different quantum technology research organizations in China on the entity list of organizations that it is not legal to export equipment to. After the Russian invasion of Ukraine in the beginning of 2022, the Treasury Department, I believe, prohibited the export of any quantum computing systems to anyone within the Russian Federation. There are rumors that more export controls may be down the line. An undersecretary of commerce stated in a public interview that it's something that the Commerce Department is looking into. The United States recently put a whole large array of export controls on semiconductor technology, not quantum technology, on China, which I think has been quite effective in greatly slowing down Chinese advancement of that particular technology. So it's certainly not impossible that something similar might happen in quantum technology. We did address the topic in our 2022 report, the possibility of export controls, and our conclusion was that we felt it was premature to impose export controls on quantum computing or communication systems because those technologies are still fairly early stage. It's still essentially impossible to separate out the concerning military applications from the less concerning civilian applications. And these technologies are still at a fairly early stage of research and development where export controls could really significantly slow down the march of scientific progress within the United States as well. Because this is a really highly international area. A lot of scientific publications are co-authored between the United States and allied countries, as well as with China. Actually, one of the notable findings in our report was the country that United States quantum technology scientists co-author the most papers with is China. There's actually a lot of scientific co-publication between the US and China in that field. I think targeted export controls on individual organizations is a lot less concerning. I would not object to that. I think there's certainly a very strong argument to be made there, and I don't think that would risk really slowing down the global advancement of the field as a whole. But I think really broad export controls that apply across the board to all countries do really run a risk of slowing down scientific progress. So I would be cautious about applying those export controls too prematurely just because the industry is in a very, very different place from the much more mature semiconductor industry. So I'd be careful about drawing too close of an analogy between those two areas.
Edward, you did say that it was premature to impose export controls on quantum computing and communications, but you didn't mention quantum sensing. Is that an area that should be of concern, or is that an area that you think we should take more action on?
There are already export controls on sensors of certain sensitivity levels or that operate in certain ways. There's already many export controls there, many of which arguably already apply to certain quantum sensors, or at least will apply once those quantum sensors hit the market. And I think that's appropriate. I think quantum sensors are already more mature. I think there's a little more confidence in what their use cases might be, although there's still a lot of uncertainty there too. And I think it is easier to identify specific sensitivity thresholds or size thresholds at which point they become a militarily, operationally useful device. And in that case, I think it is certainly appropriate to impose export controls on devices that might kind of give concrete military utility in the near term. So yes, I think that in situations where we can identify a concrete military operational advantage to certain quantum sensors, it would definitely make sense to impose export controls on those quantum sensors, potentially with licensing capabilities that would allow us to export them to friendly allied nations, for example, in certain circumstances.
Great, thank you. I want to end the podcast on a larger overall question of just how important is quantum technology for the United States when we're talking about overall competition with China. As you know, competition is not only in the technology space, but also how different technologies may support each country's economic development as well as national security. So as you look at the importance of quantum, particularly also given the fact that you also focus on artificial intelligence and other technologies, how important is that the United States maintains the lead on quantum?
That's the $64,000 question, and it is quickly coming closer to the $64 billion question if you look at how much money is being invested in this space. It's very difficult to say. there's a huge range of opinions on quantum technology by well-qualified experts. Some people think the engineering challenges are just too formidable. The known use cases are still relatively modest. And I think that is true. I think there are certain quantum algorithms that are well known, as I said, for things like chemistry simulation, but there's a bit of a desire for more applications which are not yet well understood. Other people say we are currently in the place where regular computing was in the 1940s, where we had in the 40s, you know, massive building scale computers that had a limited set of applications. The average person never dreamed that they would ever own such a thing. And now look at where we are. You know, we all have supercomputers in our pockets that we use all the time. They've fundamentally changed the nature of everyday life everywhere in the world. I think both of those futures are not impossible for quantum. There are still theoretical reasons to believe that these could be truly transformative on the scale of ordinary computers or the internet. There are also plausible reasons to believe all the known applications are just too challenging to pull off and may never actually be feasible. The costs are extremely high. The hardware resources are enormously high. The most transformative applications, I think, are still a decade plus into the future, even thinking optimistically. So this is still a very kind of long-term investment. So I'm kind of agnostic. I am optimistic. I think that quantum computers especially, and all three fields probably, will deliver pretty serious economic value, pretty significant national security implications, but it's really hard to say how much. And, you know, you could make a case people are underestimating or overestimating. This is really an early stage technology where anything could happen. I will say perhaps the most disruptive application of quantum computing is one that we don't want to see, which is that a bad actor gets their hands on a quantum computer, which is capable of breaking all decryption, and then could read all of our email and intercept all of our credit card transactions and read national security secrets and read sensitive scientific proprietary information. And that would be very bad. So perhaps the most disruptive future scenarios are ones that we really don't want to experience. But that having been said, I'm pretty optimistic that in the long term, probably again, more than a decade out, these quantum technologies will actually have significant and positive commercial as well as national security applications. Although I'll admit it's not obvious exactly what those applications will look like. And I think that's why we need to do more research and development to figure out what these things will be able to do.
And just so that we can put quantum in context, Edward, I know you also focus on artificial intelligence. Is there also a similar sense of ambivalence and uncertainty when it comes to artificial intelligence? Or is this unique to quantum because of how difficult it is?
I think the two are in a very different place right now. I think from artificial intelligence, we've already seen dramatic applications, the most obvious being ChatGPT that was released at the end of last year, which there's still a possibility that artificial intelligence will kind of fizzle out, but I think it's safe to say that possibility looks pretty small right now. And while we can't predict what the impacts will be, they'll probably be pretty big and they'll probably be pretty dramatic. As with quantum, I think it's difficult to say whether those applications will be mostly positive or mostly negative. There's high upside and high downside in artificial intelligence. To be perfectly frank, if I had to put money on one or the other, I think artificial intelligence perhaps has a higher probability of fundamentally transforming the way we live our lives in the future. But I wouldn't say that probability is zero for quantum technology either. So I would say the two technologies are similar in the sense that there's a lot of uncertainty and high upside risk as well as high downside risk. I think with quantum technology, the downside risk is better understood. It's the risk to encryption. But I would say there is a very big difference between the two technologies in that it's just really hard to say how transformative quantum will be at all. Perhaps not very. Whereas with artificial intelligence, I think for better or for worse, we're probably going to be in for a wild ride in AI over the next 20 years.
Thank you very much, Edward, for a very in-depth conversation that helps us simplify many of the very complex topics and technologies that you are studying and researching on every day. And really appreciate you bring the conversation to a level in which general listeners who might have very limited understanding of quantum technologies can follow, but also understand the larger and broader geopolitical implications. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This was great. Thank you for having me.